Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
We're back, and this time it's personal.
Better than ever.
We're back, and this time it's personal. It's Ruthie, the lockdown sessions. I mean, we haven't done one for, is it a fortnight, do you think?
2 weeks or something, yeah.
2 or 3 weeks.
What is time in these surges?
Well, yeah, and the reason is that difficult to sort of engender the enthusiasm. I find. I mean, I've still been enthusiastic about doing it, but...
It's difficult to make me enthusiastic.
That's what I mean. And I can understand that.
Don't have that much to say, really, you know, when we're in lockdown.
No. Although, the interesting thing is you did a little drinks party with your friends from uni.
Yeah.
That was nice. A bit of vodka and lime and soda.
Yeah, very good vodka, lime, soda as well.
Yes, you were so impressed with, because you'd not had, you were a bit worried that it would be like proper lime juice.
Yeah, usually I get like lime cordial. Well, it's lime, it is lime, but you know, it's that very green, like when it's really fake and sugary.
You're fake and sugary, yeah.
Mum bought like a fancy cordial.
Mm. And you were worried it would have too much lime in it.
It was going to be
too... Well, too limey.
Yeah, too limey, too... Not like fake lime, I thought it was going to be like actual lime. But it was excellent.
Yes, I know. You were so enthusiastic, you actually came down and insisted I tasted it.
It was really good.
Mm. And you've done bits and pieces with your friends. Would you say about once a week you do a Zoom thing?
I do once a week with friends from uni and then my friends from home, Well, we probably do a call a week.
Did a bit of a FaceTime, didn't you, this morning?
Yeah, that's when it's just like a single friend.
Yeah, but there's no replacement for actually...
Oh, it's not at all. I miss the days when we didn't know what Zoom was.
And we did a little Zoom thing this week with David Hepworth and Mark Ellen, who I had to explain to you, they were big... See, it's...
You shouldn't say that.
Let me finish. I had to explain their involvement in something called Live Aid. Mm. See, that's such a part of the culture. Anybody who's over, say, 40, 45, and you mention Live Aid, they immediately know exactly what you're talking about. But Live Aid was, you said, is it at all connected with Band Aid? Because Band Aid you've heard of, because they
It's a spin-off of Band Aid.
No, as Live Aid was the big thing.
Yeah.
And I explained to you, it was a BBC report on famine in Ethiopia. And Bob Geldof, who was the Boomtown Rats, we've mentioned.
I know who Bob Geldof is.
Well, we've played the Boomtown Rats, I think, on the podcast. It's probably not made it to Spotify, but I did to our mythical Spotify playlist. Yeah, but it did. We did mention that. But the point about that is the BBC reporter Michael Burke, who you know primarily as a contestant on House of Games, had
a.
Mum didn't like him.
She didn't, yeah.
Yeah, and I did explain that he was a hero from, Live Aid, before Live Aid. His report from Ethiopia was so good that these rock stars who happened to be watching the TV decided we have to do something.
They're the old Ariana Grande.
They are.
David Hepworth and Mark Allen.
They are, in a way, yeah. They presented it together with my other friend Andy Kershaw.
Did you see that people on Twitter were sharing, it was like at the start of lockdown, I think they were like, for these trying times, share your most mundane celebrity stories. And it was just a lot of people just being like, once saw Jodie Comer buying a loaf of bread. It was really funny. Once saw Jimmy Carr in Leeds train station. I saw Rebecca Adlington in a juice bar.
Wow.
In Glasgow.
In a juice bar in Glasgow, when they had the Commonwealth Games on up there.
Because we went to see the gymnastics. Yeah.
Well, this is good. You should do remember these stories, trade on them.
I do. You know who I've never met or seen? Nicola Adams. A lot of people have seen her if you're from Leeds. I know you've met her.
I have a picture of myself with Nicola Adams, which I can share with you.
You know who you met who was cool?
Example.
Example is actually cool. You met the head teacher from Educating Yorkshire.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I think that's the best one.
Oh, good. So that beats Prince Charles or any of those other people.
I'm not excited about you meeting Prince Charles.
No. Fair enough. I met him by accident. I have to say, I wasn't getting my MBE at the time. That's when I met him.
Oh, I thought you met him at like a thing where they're like, what do you do?
Yes, it was exactly what do you do? And I was quickly ushered out of the room when they found out I was a reporter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was opening an extension to this theatre in Bristol.
Yeah.
And he was meeting people from the theatre, what do you do and all that. And I happened to be in there reporting on this and ended up on the line of people that he was supposed to be meeting.
You know what I learned? You know, we often call it a global pandemic. Pandemic means a disease that's global. So what we're really saying is a global. The word global is
unnecessary.
It doesn't. We should just call it. If you call something a pandemic, it means global.
That's,
so we need to cut out the.
That's a very good point. We're all wasting. You know, although we've all got lots of time, so that's why we. You know what I mean? We're locked down, so we might as well just stick in the word global. No, you're absolutely right. Do you know what you call that when you have an unnecessary?
I do, and I can't remember. And now you're going to tell me.
Tautology.
Tautology. Yeah.
Yeah. It would have been so much cooler if you'd have said, that's tautology. Say it now and I'll edit
it. No, I think you edit this to make yourself sound smarter and me to sound less smart.
No, I edit it mainly for editorial reasons, so it sort of flows more.
I say so many intelligent things and you cut them out.
Mainly because I don't cut anything out that you say that's intelligent. Now, clearly, there's loads of demonstrations going on at the moment, obviously across America, and there was a big one in Trafalgar Square in London, and there have been smaller ones, even some of the places in the UK, Liverpool and such like. I've watched two documentaries on Sky TV recently. One was about Muhammad Ali. The other one was about Ella Fitzgerald, which I finished watching. That's an absolutely fantastic documentary, which I would urge you to watch, but I know you won't because you're still watching Game of Thrones. She was so absolutely brilliant. And she used to do these gigs down in the southern states where they were segregated gigs and not much her, but her manager at the time, a guy called Norman Grants, who is an absolute hero, refused to play any places where they had signs up saying Negro, white, so segregated places. And they were arrested in between the first and second show because she was playing cards with Dizzy Gillespie, who toured with her, and they arrested them. And clearly they arrested them because they were black, and it was a racist police force there, as happened in the States during that time. So
all times.
Yeah, when you look at the history of segregation in the South, which is still going on, I think we mentioned this before, it's still going on in my lifetime.
I think I was reading a really interesting thing about how they often make photos of that show segregation and show protests in the past and stuff. They often make them black and white to fool people into thinking it was longer ago
than it was. Historical. Because, it's interesting,
To make you think, oh, it's not a problem anymore, that was the past, but it's within people's lifetimes, it's in the last 50 years, and obviously it still goes on today, but it makes people complacent if they imagine that it's...
I think you're absolutely right, and I because I've been watching the documentaries, and you know me, nothing exists until I've seen it on Sky TV, when Muhammad Ali won the gold medal in the 1960 Rome Olympics, came back to America with a gold medal that he'd won for America, he couldn't buy a hamburger in Louisville, Kentucky.
I would urge anyone to sign petitions and donate money. I was reading a really interesting thing that someone wrote about how we think it's enough to be not racist, but you have to be actively anti-racist and you have to call it out whenever you see it and use your privilege to say, like, it's actively not okay. Like, I think it's easy, especially, like, in school. I've, sort of looking back on it now, as you obviously would now that it's so prevalent in the news and stuff, definitely there was times in school where people were racist
and you don't want to rock the boat, so you don't say anything. But I think now I would hope that I would say something. I think that the use of like BAME as a acronym and stuff is really counterproductive, because it lumps in sort of a black struggle with all other minority groups, and it's just not the case. Like, black people face a very specific and historic oppression, which is different. And there was like a girl who was Asian who was writing about how there's a definite thing, and I think it must happen over here, but she was American, and of being like a good immigrant versus a bad immigrant, and kind of black immigrants are seen as being like not the ideal, whereas Asian immigrants are there's more of a assimilation into
I'm not culture. Sure about that, because people from the West Indies, they're perceived to be more like about, us, do you know what I mean?
She was talking specifically about America, Asian American versus African American.
Oh yeah. The thing about West Indian immigrants, I think because they don't have particular, you know, dietary laws, or they have the same sort of, I know if you're a Rastafarian you've got dietary laws and things, but by and large the ones who came over in the mid 50s, you know, the Windrush generation, if you
yeah,
like,
but I mean, how badly did we let
They were treated atrociously, you know, when they tried to get a flat in Notting Hill. That's where you had the Notting Hill riots in the 60s. But they, you know, it always had no blacks, no Irish, no, you know, no dogs, no Jews, whatever. That happened in boarding houses all over London in the 1950s. But those people, the you know, West Indian immigrants, that huge wave of people, were considered to be more like us. So although they faced terrible discrimination when it came to jobs and when it came to housing and all that sort of thing, I think they were considered to have assimilated better than the Muslims, who, you know, had the language issue for a start. They had all the dietary laws. They had all the religious stuff. I think it was a lot harder for them to assimilate.
Historically as well, we have been just as bad as America, and I think...
No, never in a million years have we been just as bad as America. You know, yeah, America... Have you seen the civil rights demos in the 60s? Have you seen the compass trenches?
I think that racism in the UK is just a more subtle racism. I think we've been just as racist for just as long, and we are probably just as racist. It's
no,
just much
they were segregated until the mid-90s. When Martha Rees and the Vandellas came over here, they were amazed they could go into restaurants and go into hotels. We're nowhere near
no,
as... If
that,
we start beating ourselves up and saying we're as bad as America, you know,
we are an incredibly racist country. It's just a very different brand of racism.
Well, everybody's racist to some extent. Everybody prefers their own group to other groups. I'm not saying there isn't racism. I agree with you. There absolutely is racism everywhere. But to say we're as bad as America is an unbelievable exaggeration. They had segregation until like the 70s. If you go to, even now, if you go to parts of America...
I think some people say that racism is not really as much of a thing over here, and I just definitely think it is.
No, it's not. It is a thing, but it's not as much of a thing as it is in America by a long, long distance.
I don't know. I think it's just a much more... I think it's subtler, and I think it's more clever, and I think it is through... I think it's institutionalised here, and I think it's just very different. So, you look at something like Grenfell and people not being rehoused, and there's racism in government and stuff. It's not even for me to say. It's black people have said it, and they've said it's in every aspect of life, and it's there. It's just subtle, and people don't realise it. And people say, if we have a Stephen Lawrence Memorial Day, then it doesn't exist so much, but it does.
Now we've got an email.
Well, glorious.
Yes, I was looking for the flood of emails that we might get asking us to come back when we didn't.
I've had a couple of tweets.
Yeah, I think people did. I think people largely like it.
Follow me, at Ruth Kellner.
Yes. Well, Robert Black says, "Dear Martin and Ruth, typical of me to have only found your podcast yesterday and then as part of a binge listen to discover that the last episode for now has already gone out." He says, "I think this is true, but I'm a bit confused because there are episodes with a later date stamp after you announce that you've been canned." Did we say we'd been canned? I think you might have said that.
I've never said the phrase being canned. You must have said that. It sounds like you. No, we have.
Yeah.
Is this volunteer work?
Is he calling this work? He says that I thoroughly enjoyed what I've heard and you ought to be congratulated on engaging, entertaining and informing us. I'm a big podcast listener, so can only imagine that I missed yours through less than optimally effective promotion. Oh, well, we'll try and promote it a bit more. I sincerely hope you find a way to return. Anyway, he says, thanks for doing the podcasts and let's hope you can revive them, stay safe. And that's from Robert Black, so bless him for that. Should we have a little bit of music?
Let's have The Moon Song by Biba Doobie.
How do you spell Biba Doobie?
B-E-A-D.
Is it all one word?
Yeah.
Like Doobie Doobie Doo?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah, just like Doobie Doobie Doo.
Yeah, good. Biba Doobie.
It's a town, a shiny place.
Tell me all about it, or a little bit about it.
So, Biba Doobie did a TikTok song.
Ah, you were going to explain TikTok to me. Well,
and so I thought, I'll play a TikTok. But this is not a TikTok song, but she...
Did do a TikTok song. Yeah.
Not, I don't know. She didn't make the song specifically for it to be...
No, but it became a TikTok hit, did it?
A TikTok hit, yes.
Yes, I'm still talking in terms of hit records. Explain to me what a TikTok hit is, and basically what the appeal of TikTok is. I know it's not for me, so I've not bothered with it.
No, it's not.
No, well,
you wouldn't like it. You wouldn't understand it.
No, precisely.
There's no point.
No point. But I'd like to...
That ship has sailed.
That ship sailed probably 40 years ago. Tell me about TikTok.
I don't know what to say. I don't know what to tell you.
It's short videos, isn't it?
And you just watch them for hours and then you feel terrible about yourself.
Why do you watch them for hours? What is it that keeps you watching?
Because you think that the next one is going to be the funniest.
So it's humour, it's entirely humour, yeah.
It's not entirely humour, because some of them are like little tips videos and stuff. People show you how to make a drink or whatever.
Oh, right.
But a lot of them are funny.
But then are they done by influencers or are they just done by
other
people?
So there are people who are like TikTok famous. So there's people like Charlie D'Amelio or Madison Beer, is she one? I think she might be. Mm. I'm trying to... Addison Rae, she's got like 56 million... No, Charlie D'Amelio has like 56 million TikTok followers.
Oh, so you follow people on TikTok?
Yeah, you can follow people on TikTok. I don't really, because I'm not...
No, you don't sound as though you're that into TikTok.
I love it.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I think I hate that I do, but I've watched so much of it. It's awful, but I don't really follow people or anything. But so she'll do like dances, I believe. Mm.
Yes, I've seen you doing a little TikTok dance.
No, Dad, I haven't done that.
She has.
This is so embarrassing. I'm also too old for it.
Are you too old for TikTok? Really? At 19?
I'm like 15.
Oh, really?
Charlie D'Amelio's like 15, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe younger. And it's also, it's like the girls on there are highly like sexualized, even though they're literally minors.
Really?
It's an incredibly problematic
platform. Is it? Why do you say it's problematic?
Just because, like, the algorithms for it like will really promote you if you're thin and white. There's a lot of like body image issues where there are these girls and they are, I mean, beautiful. Like so many people on it are like unreal looking, and I don't know whether you'll have remembered this, but do you remember when Tumblr was a really big thing?
I remember Tumblr.
I was just a little bit too young, I think, but there was a lot of anorexia posts on it, I think it was called like Prorexia or something like that. Really, truly awful, and like a lot of girls like died, I think, from not obviously not directly from Tumblr, but a lot of these like pro anorexia things where you would encourage people not to eat, and then you would share like very aesthetic images of starvation, essentially, and it hits that kind of same demographic but just a lot later and in a similar way, I think. And it, like those like Tumblr things have kind of ceased to exist for a while.
I think it's interesting,
I think,
that
so a little bit, and it's also because it's that 14, 15 year old girl bracket is like, that's the worst age to be a girl. Honestly, like truly horrific time. And I think, and it makes you impressionable. And it's when your self-esteem is the lowest. And I do worry about
TikTok.
just because it's not healthy, and because it's all pictures and it's very like in your face and stuff.
And people do it because they, and I only know this from the James Graham short play that was on the telly. Mm. People do it because they want to go viral, yeah. Which is interesting in the middle of a virus that they want to go viral. But that's encouraged me not to go anywhere near TikTok.
Yeah, you don't need to.
No, I don't need TikTok. I'm on Twitter.
Yeah, you wouldn't like it because you don't even really like Instagram.
No, I'm not. I don't do Instagram.
Yeah, I'm a big Instagram fan.
Yeah. Is that for the slightly older, you know, for your sort of age group?
It's just actually, all sorts of people TikTok, on it, aren't they? Yeah.
But again, it's just pictures,
again,
isn't
follow
it?
Me, at Ruth Kellner.
You're at Ruth Kellner on Instagram?
Yeah, no, you don't actually have to follow me on Instagram. I
probably already am following you, I suspect.
I believe so. I don't think you don't like my photos, though.
Don't I? Not well, I do like
phone.
Them.
Sometimes if I'm with you, that I will go on your phone and like my photos.
Ah, right. Really? That's interesting. My piece of music is Ella Fitzgerald, mainly because I watched this documentary about her.
A thing I saw on Twitter about Ella Fitzgerald. Marilyn Monroe used to call up...
Oh, they were great friends.
Yeah, they were great friends. She used to call up the bars and say, if you don't let Ella sing, because obviously it was still... Like, if they said she couldn't sing because she was black, she would ring up and say, I'm going to be in the front row and if you don't let Ella Fitzgerald sing, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Which someone said is a really excellent example of how to use your privilege to amplify someone else, not to amplify yourself.
Bless her. Well, she was very... I mean, Marilyn Monroe was very much in favour of, what they used to call progressive politics in America, you know, against segregation and all that. But she suffered horrendously, Ella Fitzgerald, mainly because she wasn't glamorous. You know, the whole image of... Mm. They used to sing with bands. She was with a band called the Chick Webb Band. I know you won't watch this documentary, but I will show you the footage. I'll try and find it. The footage of when Chick Webb died, and you won't believe the crowd that was at his funeral. I mean, literally the whole of Black New York was there. You know, it was all Harlem, which was basically an entirely black area at that point in time. And Ella Fitzgerald grew up sort of homeless on the streets of Harlem, and she went to a reform school. She had a really, really hard upbringing. But because she wasn't glamorous, everything that she got, she got through her voice. It's always cool to like Billie Holiday, and she's always held up as the great black jazz singer of that era. But you only have to watch the documentary to realise that it was Ella Fitzgerald.
And what song are we listening to?
We're listening to a song called All the Things You Are, which was written by Jerome Kern. She did, in the early 60s, she did a series of songbooks. She did the George Gershwin songbook, the Cole Porter songbook, the Rodgers and Hart songbook, all the great American songbook songs, and interpreted them better than any, because up till that point, you know, they were mostly in musicals, black and white, sort of throwaway musicals, really. And she took these songs and elevated them to jazz standards. And we have to pay tribute to Norman Grant, who was her... I mean, he fought against segregation all the time. He was the manager that I talked about before. And it was his idea, all these songbooks. And this is a Jerome Kern song.
You are the promised kiss of springtime that makes the lonely winter seem long. You are the breathless hush of evening.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy.
Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Ruth, there's been a series of articles by a guy called Satnam Sangeri, who's a very, very good columnist in the Times. And he's living, for a variety of reasons I won't go into, he's living with his two nieces, he's locked down with two nieces. He's like a sort of guy in his 40s type of thing. And well, he might be in his 30s, I don't know. But he did this film, Blinded by the Light, about Bruce Springsteen. But he wrote the book and then they made a film out of it. But he's written about his lockdown experience with his two nieces. And a lot of these things I can identify with. Nieces about your age. Maybe slightly younger. They're teenagers, certainly. And he says, there have been tensions, some of which have been intergenerational. Like many young people, Jasveen and Simran, they're the two girls, have a maddening way of watching TV that doesn't seem to involve watching TV at all. This, you see, something will be on in the background while they scroll through their phones.
Yes, that is my favourite thing.
And occasionally they will acknowledge some dialogue or smirk at a joke. This is just so familiar. My efforts to make them concentrate on something for longer than 5 minutes to explain basic plot lines have gone down like a persistent cough. Here we go. This is the response of these teenage girls to him. I used to like The Simpsons until you made it really boring.
Yeah, you do that. You managed to make me not want to watch stuff because you want me to watch it so much and you talk about it so much and then it feels like a chore.
Yeah, Hull's Headscarf
Heroes.
Oh my
God, if I have to listen you to you must, tell...
Well, watch it. You will love it. You would love it. It is just genius.
It's like when you get told to do your homework, but obviously you're not going to want to do it then.
I compel them to watch Groundhog Day, one of my favourite movies. I'm with you there, Satnam. And they loathed it, which made me want to force them to watch it every day until they conceded it was a masterpiece. This is just so familiar.
When I watched Groundhog Day,
you love it.
I love it.
You love
Groundhog Day. Yeah, I do love Groundhog Day.
It's got flaws.
I did rewatch it. Yeah, I did think this is not as good as I remember it.
No.
Which is a shame.
It is a shame.
Same with Wonder.
Yeah, One Day. That was nowhere near as good as I remember. The best thing is the music. Who did the music?
Rachel Portman.
Portman. Brilliant music.
I listen to that when I'm studying. The thing that One Day is brilliant is because the first 20 minutes are excellent and the last half an hour is excellent. So then you forget all the middle part and then you go to watch it again. But now, and then you're crying so much at the end. And then so I'm like, oh, well, you remember it as being better because the end is so good.
Don't give it away.
No, I'm not giving it away. But Anne Hathaway's Leeds accent is an absolute travesty.
It's an abomination.
She just goes in and out of it all the time. She's like, oh yeah, I'll do that word. No, I won't bother with those.
Yeah. It's like your Irish accent, really.
Yeah, but I'm not casting a blockbuster film. I just do my Irish accent in the kitchen.
You do. And it sort of veers from right at the far north of Ireland right to the far south.
Yeah, I'm sometimes staying in the right ballpark.
You're in the right. You're on the right island.
Yeah, exactly.
Just about.
Sometimes it goes a bit Scottish.
Anyway, the other thing he says, which, you know, not quite true of you. He says, now, suggesting watching anything made before 2004 goes down like the suggestion they ride down to the shops on a penny farthing. So there's all sorts of stuff in here. So I have to commend Satnam Sangeri to you. He says, 10 weeks into lockdown with my two Generation Z nieces, and we're still finding new things to argue about.
Not, we don't argue that much.
Not that much. Not least, although...
We're more passive-aggressive. We like a good bit of...
I've never quite understood what passive-aggressive is.
It's just like we would never have an actual shouting argument, but we would both.
I think we have had one or two.
Not that often. Not under lockdown.
Are you not more passive-aggressive with me than I am with you, would you say?
Probably. I don't enjoy an argument. I like to
just
mumble stuff under my breath
and then
wait for it all to boil over in like 10 years.
Yeah.
When it all come out at once.
Yeah.
I like to push everything down.
There was a very amusing... Oh, you watched the John Oliver show with me.
Yeah.
A very amusing joke where...
But you can say it for these people's purposes.
For these people. Now, listen to these people. It was on John Oliver's show, and he was talking about UFC coming back, you know, the Ultimate Fighting thingy, coming back. And he says, one of the rare chances you get to see grown adults exert violence in an enclosed space, apart from Thanksgiving, or in our case, Christmas, obviously. Okay. Anyway,
it wouldn't be Christmas without one.
It certainly wouldn't. So he says...
Yeah, I have got two sisters, so that's not... I think anyone who has more than one sister would appreciate that there's going to be a screaming match.
Of course there is going to be a screaming match. He says, anyway, we're still finding new things to argue about, not least there's the question of whether it's acceptable not to flush the toilet after a wee. I think it's good for the environment. They think it's unhygienic and disgusting.
Yeah, I completely
or what
agree.
You would say is weird. You would call most
that
things
weird. That I would call just
disgusting.
Disgusting. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Raisins.
It's just like right. I think the main thing of lockdown why it annoys everyone because you see everyone doing everything. So like you see them making breakfast and you see them doing their work and you see them relaxing. Like you have to see everything and people just have their own ways of doing things and I find it really difficult. To, I just want everyone to do. It might
Anything. Well, we said that about uni, that you said that all the kids, all the people at uni
I think
share
it has
your
their
kitchen.
Own way of doing
they're all
things.
Weird, whereas you're exactly normal.
Yeah.
What is it particularly irritating about seeing people doing stuff on during lockdown?
You just don't have to spend this much time with anyone usually. You go out to eat sometimes, so it's just the mundanity.
So if I have, say, a bit of leftover chicken and put baked beans on it.
Oh, I can't even talk. It's mainly a food thing. I just don't like seeing anyone else eat, ever.
No, you don't, do you?
I hate it. Yeah. I don't even like other people seeing me eat, really.
Mm.
Like, I find it uncomfortable.
That's interesting. Well, anyway, he's not mentioned that, but what he says is raisins in food are proving equally contentious. I like them. He says, I like them. They abandon any meal that features them. But most contentious of all is the question of what counts as an acceptable amount of sleep. I draw the line at 9 hours, but my student niece has been getting up to 11 hours a time, and it drives me mad.
I think it's fine that you should be able to sleep as long as you want.
Yeah, but you don't do that. You sleep for very long at all. I mean, 8 hours is sort of maximum for you, isn't it?
I don't massively sleep for ages. No. Like, sometimes I will stay in bed for like another 2 hours, but I'm not usually asleep. But also, like, teenagers, we do need a lot of sleep.
Precisely.
So, it's just, fair enough, sleep away.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there.
I could sleep for 11 hours, I would.
Mm. The science suggests young people need lots of sleep. But truly, I would be less bothered by the knowledge that someone was burning £20 notes in my spare bedroom. Don't sleep your precious life away. Is that
what? You, what, are we do, what else are you?
There's no precious
to do,
life.
There's no not precious life.
Except you could read books.
Yeah,
and
I've got a pile.
Well,
of
I
books.
Thought you would.
I'm
I mean,
so,
I've been bad as well when it comes to reading books.
It's the lockdown thing.
Mm.
I just find it like I think everyone's really found that. They're not as productive as they thought they were going to be. They've not mastered a new skill.
I've been unproductive.
Like,
because and I think
it's also the like I like going places to do stuff. Mm. Like I never used to work at home. I always used to.
No, you used to
go
to the library, didn't you? Yeah.
Even when I was working, just like writing and stuff, I just like to be somewhere else. Like when I was at uni, I didn't used to work in my room barely ever.
Mm.
I hate it. And then also you're doing all your work so you can go to a gig or a party or a club.
Deadlines. You need deadlines, don't you?
You have to, yeah. If you want something doing, give it to a busy person.
Absolutely, and they're dead right. And I thought, well, I'm going to be more productive because I'm doing the show from home. So that time I would spend commuting down to London. I've got here at home, like today, I would be thinking, well, tomorrow morning I've got to get off to London, therefore whatever I have to do for my award-winning show on Talk Radio, I have to do it today. But with no deadline, I'm not doing anything.
And also, I've spoken to a lot of people because it's also the guilt, and then you feel so guilty about not writing a novel with all this new time you've got and stuff.
Yeah.
But I have spoken to a lot of people.
And a play, you can write plays because you can do that.
Dad, I'm trying. But I've spoken to everyone and everyone agrees that it's just, it's so difficult to be productive under these conditions.
Yeah, I agree with you. And then you watch like 10 minutes of TV news and think to yourself, oh, what the hell? What's the point?
Yeah, what's the point?
What's the point? We're all going to die.
I've become very in touch with my own mortality.
Yeah. I know. Well, we were discussing that this morning. Although some people get in touch with their own mortality, they become more religious, which I think you've done to an extent, because you were saying this morning...
Oh, no, I've always thought this. So I was brought up Catholic.
Catholic, yeah.
And went to Catholic school until I was 16, so all of high school and whatever. And there's a tiny part of me, and I don't believe in God, but there is a little part of me that does think if I do sinful things, obviously... Also, sin is such a ridiculous concept.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if I do sins, then someone will strike me down. There's just a little part of me that thinks... I think it would
There's probably a little part of everybody that maybe sort of... But it doesn't make it make much sense. I mean, what does make sense is that man invented God so that we could have
a
series of rules. So I take the humanist view, really, and I just think that... Even if there was no, if we didn't think there was a higher power that was going to strike us down, I don't think we'd go around killing people.
We're not just savages, yeah.
Talking of savages, by the way, I've noticed a copy of Lord of the Flies hanging around, but not a lot of reading of it going on.
Dad, why would you do this?
It's just a mild suggestion.
But then also, you get these, so this is another lockdown thing. There must be a word for the sudden wave of thinking, oh my God, I've got to do stuff.
It would have to be a word that fits onto corona. So like...
Corona epiphany or something
like that. Yeah, something like that.
Everyone should follow Susie Dent because she's basically my favourite person.
I thought Richard Osmond was your favourite person.
Susie Dent is my favourite person. Richard Osmond is one of my friend's favourite people.
By the way, he's Osmond, not Osmond.
Oh, yeah, I always say Osmond, sorry.
Yeah, he's not one of the Osmonds, who were a group in the 70s. Have you heard of the Osmonds?
Yeah. I think we've literally had this conversation before.
Yeah, they're a Mormon family. Salt Lake City, I might mention it.
But I love Susie. She's got a really good podcast called Something Rhymes with Purple. But follow her on Twitter, because she does some excellent word facts. She did one the other day, I've written it down. She tweeted, Lucifugal, which means peeking out from the duvet and then promptly diving back under.
Is that a
real word, yeah.
Oh, is it? How do you spell it? L-U-C-I?
L-U-C-I-F-U-G-A-L.
Lucifugal.
Yeah. She shares a lot of words. They're usually sort of like words that have just disappeared.
Gone out of usage
and stuff.
That must be fairly modern, though, because duvet is probably only 40 years old.
Well, it might be like blanket.
Yeah. Lucifugal. It might be blankets because the duvet is a fairly... We never had them when I was a kid.
But she's so...
I never saw a banana till I was 14. As you've raised language as an issue, let's talk about the French. They're fighting a rear guard battle and almost certainly a losing battle to stop English words being part of the French language.
I don't think they are. Losing it. They're incredibly stubborn people.
Oh, they're incredibly stubborn people.
I'll tell you what, they know how to protest.
And they know how to protest. Are they doing the Black Lives Matter?
In France now.
In Paris, obviously. In Paris, Les banlieues.
I think that it's in the centre of the city, to be honest. But yeah, the people of the banlieue, definitely. They are...
Well, they like a protest.
And they're doing it well. That's why you retire at 62 with full benefits in France.
Well, this losing battle, they've already lost the battle on Le Weekend. Le Weekend is Le Weekend.
They don't even say it.
And Le Snickers, they've lost the battle on Snickers. They're now trying clickbait, fake news, spoiler. You know, Le Fake News, they're not in for that, but people are still using it. French equivalents have been stipulated by the Commission for the Enrichment of the French Language, which reports to the Prime Minister. Undaunted by decades of failures to hold back the tide of franglais, they're now trying chiclet, le chiclet. They called it romance urbaine. Romance urbaine is the French word to convey the snappy concision of chiclet. They now, if you want to say le autotune, the autotune is ajustement automatique d'intonation, the word for podcast, le podcast is what they actually call it. But what the French sort of bureaucrats want you to call it is diffusion pour baladeur, which means broadcast for the walker. Nobody's using that, so they've tried another one, audio à la demande, which is audio on demand, which just sort of, that's not quite podcast, is it? That's anything, really. You know, on demand doesn't just mean podcast. But anyway, good luck to the Académie Française. But these are all things you'll have to take on board. You're still doing your Duolingo, aren't you, French?
Yeah.
I'm doing a bit of that as well. Very little bit.
You're not very good. I'm on it all the bloody time.
Yeah.
It's like a weird addiction.
Well, it's, do you know why? They use the same sort of algorithms as gambling sites use. You know, they reward and, you know, they give you a little ding-dong reward and a bit of a, you know,
the more gem, time you spend,
they give you gems and things, don't they?
Yeah. Get gems.
You've got to get gems. And despite the fact there's no money involved, I mean, gambling's obviously more toxic because there's money involved.
I mean, as much as they use the same algorithms, I don't think anyone's saying that, oh God, make them stop learning language. Like, I just go on it a lot because it's just easy. Like, I just go on it. That's what I do while I'm watching TV.
Yes, why don't you just concentrate on, and when you consider how much I got out of Hull's Headscarf Heroes and the Muhammad Ali documentary and the Ella Fitzgerald documentary.
Because I sit and concentrate on them. And then put Game of Thrones on in the background.
Yeah,
what,
but
I like to do.
And that's an insult to George R.R. Martin, the fact that
he didn't write the series.
No, he did write Game of Thrones.
Didn't write the TV series.
No, but he wrote the books. I mean, he was a credible, proper writer. And then obviously TV turned it into soft porn and
right, we can't get into this again. Also, no one cares about Game of Thrones anymore.
No, they don't. So why are you watching it all the time?
Because I like to have it, because I've already seen it, so I can have it on in the background.
Have nothing on in the background.
Because you telling me not to watch it makes me want to watch it more.
I don't tell you not to watch it. I see you just.
Yeah, but your disdain makes me want to watch it.
I thought you didn't care less about my disdain.
Well, some part of me does.
Yeah.
It's the God-fearing bit.
Here's something that would appeal to you. This is, you know, because you're always on about white privilege and things. Here's a great example.
Say it like I'm just like nattering on.
This is a great example of it. With education now going online, Britain's ancient public schools are keen to ensure there's no slippage in standards. Last week, the head of St Paul's Juniors in London introduced the online summer term by asking boys to stand to attention at their laptops while a rousing rendition of Jerusalem was played. And I've never seen you standing to attention at your laptop. But, I mean, how is it? Are you doing? And I've not noticed you doing much online learning unless you...
There's no classes anymore. I do work.
Yeah.
Like, I'll read articles and do some French practice and Spanish practice and stuff. But there are no... There's nothing.
Are you sort of losing the will, you know, as far as I know that, but as far as your university life goes, you're losing the will to live, sort of thing.
What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is, do you sort of feel detached from university now? I mean, you'd be probably heading for the sort of holiday period anyway, wouldn't you?
Yeah, now I would be, yeah. But it's just different, isn't it?
Well, it is different. I'm just wondering if you're managing to keep motivated about your degree and everything.
Not hugely. I don't feel massively motivated about anything currently. No. Feels like it's a bit in vain at the moment. Do you know what I mean? I think, like, my generation, we've grown up in quite tumultuous times in general. Stuff like the rise of artificial intelligence that's happened, the rise of social media, the 2008 recession, I have a sort of theory.
Oh, good.
We came into the world when 9/11 happened, and 9/11 changed the world.
That was 2001?
Yeah, 2001. So I was a baby.
You were one, you were a baby.
Like lots of people.
I remember. I remember you being a baby, you were very upset.
But what your parents...
Dad, can we watch those towers coming down again?
No, what your parents believe and the tone of the world, I think, changed. Definitely. I think a lot of people have said that as well. It's not just me. And then stuff like 2008 recession.
Well, you see...
sort of Brexit, like quite uneasy sort of governments in a lot of ways and stuff.
And I think that all those things kind of in some way sink into your psyche. Like, I don't remember the 2008 recession massively.
I wouldn't count that as tumultuous.
But it's a general, like, I think we've spoken about it before, but the general atmosphere throughout my life in this country is worry. Just an underground hum of worry. And then you have this pandemic and a background hum of like just there.
Can I just say, as someone who's lived a lot longer, we're always living through tumultuous times. If you think of growing up in the 60s, if you think growing up in the 60s, Khrushchev and Kennedy were, you know, at the United Nations, Khrushchev took his shoe off and banged it on the desk.
I know, that was
over Cuba. And we all thought the world was going to end.
I know you did. Yeah. But for between sort of, so like my older siblings, when they, so like anyone born sort of like 80, between 80 and 2000, millennials, I don't think they've had the same kind of background hum of panic as we have. And then you think, pandemic, really?
Well, it's the pandemic, isn't it? It's the pandemic. I don't think, I mean, all the other things that you've mentioned.
We've talked about this before, like with stuff like Brexit.
Well, you see, I can remember in the 70s, the argument was whether we would get, because, you know, the European Union, it was called the European Iron and Coal Community, and then it was the EC, and it's been various things. But that was set up by continental Europe. We weren't in it till the 70s. What I'm saying is, no, all the argument through the 70s was, should we join Europe or not?
And interestingly, that's like 70s. That's like boomer times.
Yes.
If you think about any of the millennials who were born.
And the millennials have got the problem, you know, the whole job market disappeared. Don't forget, millennials went through the miners' strike and Mrs. Thatcher and all that.
Which millennials would be, didn't.
Well, whatever the generation, the people in their 40s now would have done.
Generation X.
But the millennials would have had the effect of the whole industrial... Yeah. You know, I'm not talking about middle class, I'm talking about everybody.
Oh, no, I know.
Had the effect of the whole industrial base having been eroded, because that happened in the 70s, but would have affected them through the 80s and the 90s. Mm. Do you know what I mean? These traditional working class jobs had disappeared.
No, I know, like, loads of jobs have, like, disappeared, and there's, like, whole industries where everyone did the same job are gone, and, like, it's... But with the whole... If we're not talking about that, but, like, with the whole pandemic thing, especially because I'm studying languages and at the moment no one can go anywhere, you do sometimes think, what am I doing, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's hope we come out of this pandemic.
I think there's just a feeling of, like, hopelessness, where it's like, I can't create a vaccine, I can't stop police brutality.
Well, you can't, because you're watching Game of Thrones.
I want to help people, but it's just like, how do you do it?
I know. But, you know, that's always the way. When Live Aid, which we were talking about, so we're going full circle and talking about Live Aid now.
Oh, look at that, it's as if we planned it.
It's almost as if it's been produced. We're going to talk to Live Aid. We'd all seen those pictures of the famine in Ethiopia, which was, you know, it was horrible to watch, and it was a brilliant, brilliant report. And we all felt that same sense of helplessness, you know. Mm. We couldn't create a vaccine, etc. And therefore, you know, people did respond by giving money to Live Aid or whatever. But that was, again, that doesn't stop the feeling of hopelessness. You know, if you bung like 10 quid to children in need, you still feel, when you watch what's going on in the world, we always feel hopeless. There's always terrible things. And the tsunami and all those things, you know.
And obviously it's like, it's really important to recognise that this feeling of like general unmotivation, and I do feel quite like lost in terms of, is obviously an incredibly privileged feeling to have.
Because at least you have got Game of Thrones, you can watch it.
But also this feeling that I'm allowed to have, because I have all my basic needs met all the time, and more than that, and I live in a safe, happy place where I'm, and I get to worry about what I'm going to do with my languages degree, and I get to worry about the existence of God and what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, because I know that I'm not going to starve, like, or be murdered by police officers. Like, I get to, and I understand that that's I'm so lucky to have the room to worry about those things, but it doesn't, it still is tough feeling.
Yeah, no, I absolutely,
you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to come across as
I think there is a word, and I don't know that I've got this word right. Suta Dent would know. I think the word is anomie, A-N-O-M-I-E. We'll put it out there, anomie. Well, I'll Google it later, but I think that is the word for sort of this feeling of, why am I so... I've got everything, you know.
Yeah.
I've got Amazon Prime, Netflix and Sky TV. Why am I so feeling so sort of downhearted about everything?
And it's also like... this lockdown gives you so much time to just ponder about what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And I just think, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? What am I going to do for the next 60 years?
You'll be fine. I think we'll come out of this pandemic and I think, you know,
new
world will be created. And as I said before, it'll be different. It'll be different. But when you see so many young people sort of demonstrating for Black Lives Matter and all that, you think, well, you know, maybe it'll be better. Maybe it'll be better.
I think you've got to remind yourself that actually, like, as much as humans probably don't have any control over the things that happen, and I think that this pandemic has taught you that above all else, is that the world is chaotic.
These are all cyclical. And as I say, this is, you know, we've always lived in tumultuous times. And we saw Russia as the great threat for years and years and years. Then we saw terrorists, Muslim terrorists mainly, as the great threat. I think China, if you look at what's happening with Hong Kong and everything, China is going to be the next, that's going to be the next great threat, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there are, like, there's already, like, mass genocide in China against
Muslims. And they're going to, you know, I think we're the same way that my generation feared the Russians, the millennial generation feared terrorism. I think what's going to be the next big fear is going to be China. So we're always in tumultuous times, but I think you'll be okay. Should we lighten it up with the random story? Or should I tell it, or do you want to tell
it? Maybe that's... We'll do one next week, and that's the hook.
What, the random story?
Tune in next week for an entertaining story about randoms.
Good. So we're doing another podcast next week.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right, excellent. So thank you very much indeed for your... if you do want to email us, by the way. Oh, I did get a few more. Andy May sent one and David Ailes sent one. So thank you to those and anybody who sent an email. But we're back. We're back now. For the time being.
For at least one more week.
At least so we can tell the random story next week. We'll definitely be back. Thank you very much. If you do want to email us, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, that's right. It's said with
I'd almost forgotten. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And we'll hopefully be back next week.
We'll be back next week.
Lovely. Well done.
Oh, gosh, my back really hurts now. Ow.
I think